Now to the real yield of this week's big interaction with the northern powerhouse parts of our neighbourhood. It was quite something to see, wasn't it? Really was. The pictures, I thought, were quite extraordinary. And when you think of China and Australia's relationship, you automatically, I suppose, think of mining. China's demand for our natural resources has spurred that industry of late and saved our bacon several times. But another sector is beckoning, possibly to assume real dominance, and on a much more human scale, arguably, financial services. A year ago, Australia became the third country only, I think it's about the fifth country only, to directly convert our currency with the Chinese yuan. Negotiations are underway to make Sydney an official yuan trading hub now. That's the next step. The only others are in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Singapore. And the other aspect you would have heard on AM is to lower restrictions on Chinese investment into Australia. Now, for those of you who, like me, find the whole implications of currency trading somewhat arcane and demanding, I've invited two people to join us to make it clearer and to really let us know how will it affect those of us who don't and are never likely to be involved in it. Cathy Walsh is an Associate Professor at the School of Finance, Actuarial Studies and Applied Statistics at the ANU's College of Business and Economics. She co-authored a report commissioned by the Centre for International Finance and Regulations on the internationalisation of the renminbi, looking at how Australia might benefit from opportunities in the opening up of China's finance sector. So, Cathy, good morning.
Good morning.
And Hans Hendrich is Professor of Chinese Management and Business and Chair of the Executive Committee of the China Studies Centre at the University of Sydney. Hans is fresh off the plane, literally this morning, from China, where he's been part of Team Australia. Good morning to you, Hans.
Good morning, Geraldine.
So now I just have to come to you first. You've just been in Shanghai and been in meetings with Andrew Robb, the Trade Minister and Investment. What is your most striking memory of this past week?
My most striking memory is how the atmosphere has shifted. We went to China with the idea free trade agreement is something difficult. It could take a while. You can't be too sure whether there will be a breakthrough. And even the Prime Minister said it will be more difficult than with the other two countries he signed agreements with or arranged agreements with. And in Shanghai, the mood had somewhat shifted around. That there was really strong optimism in the room that a free trade agreement would be achieved, most likely in time, and would lead to mutual satisfaction.
And would you say that there is something more than just us being there in big numbers? I listened to Jeff Raby, who comes on our program, and he was on Breakfast, Radio National's Breakfast program, and I heard his rather elliptical caution. I think Fran sort of said, you know, has it made a huge impression? And he said, well, you can hardly miss us. There are so many of us. Doesn't mean that we're actually changing the agenda. What was your sense, particularly given that we'd come from Japan?
Well, I think it worked both ways to have such a large number. And I think it was in the end around 700 people being there. It was a demonstration to China that there was interest and goodwill on the Australian side, which was palpable. And I think it also had an effect towards the domestic scene here to show that a very large number of business people actually have an idea that investment and cooperation with China is something that is crucial and that really will take people to sit down and work the way through and put that on a stable long-term basis.
Yeah, so it had as much impact, I wondered about that, on the domestic audience as it might have on the Chinese. And look, just before we leave this, and I'll come to you, Cathy, in a moment, what really struck me was this discussion, Andrew Robb obviously becoming more and more ambitious, with suggestions that the state-owned enterprises, which we've been extremely leery of, and very careful about, the rules might be changed around state-owned enterprises being allowed to invest here, and also possibly looking at specific investments tailored to our north and people getting concessions if they do that. And Andrew Robb sort of said that was being extended beyond the Chinese and the effort to get a lot of money into the north. How would you assess that discussion?
Well, I think that was a very big part of what produced this positive atmosphere. The considerations regarding state-owned enterprises as investors mark a turnaround to a certain degree, but I think they're fully justified because state-owned enterprises are not really all of them the old-fashioned communist planned economy loss-making enterprises, but they are among the smartest enterprises, and they normally, the good ones and the internationalized ones, are more regulated and more better governed than any private enterprise.
It's pretty, there's a lot of debate around that though, isn't there, in China too? Some of them are really still very much laggards, and which gives actual Chinese entrepreneurs find them very aggravating.
Absolutely. But in a way, what I think what has happened is that this type of debate is being reflected here as well, that we also have a much more differentiated view now and say, well, there's not one type of state-owned enterprises, but they're different types. And some are the ones we want to work with because they are the ones who have the capital, and they are the ones who can at least invest in the big project. The private sector is still too small for the really big investment projects in Australia. The point you made with the North, I think that is right. That is not a matter for China. That's where China, I think, is being told about. But that will be an international effort.
Can I come to you, Cathy, to try to make some sense for us of the impact of if we became a trading hub for the yuan, as I said at the moment, I think it's Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore, what difference would it make?
Well, actually, it's unlikely to make a great difference to start with, because even though we don't have an official locally based RMB clearing system in Australia, that doesn't mean they don't actually clear in Australia. It just means that the local banks and the Chinese banks in Australia will trade through either an offshore clearinghouse, say through Bank of China in Hong Kong, they'll go directly to China, or they'll deal with another participating bank. So the business is actually already conducted here, it's just not officially sanctioned by the PBOC. So from a company's perspective, there's actually no difference between going to their local bank, asking for a transaction. They're in fact unlikely to be aware of exactly where it's transacted, whether it's China or in Hong Kong. So if there's an official system where the PBOC designates a Chinese bank in Australia to be the official trading bank or settlement bank, the main difference is one of confidence. It means that if there's a liquidity squeeze, the PBOC will inject liquidity.
So what's the PBOC, please?
Sorry, the People's Bank of China.
Right, okay.
So the they will actually get from their own... they will get an injection of liquidity, which means that in a liquidity squeeze, which is probably not something that we would consider a major threshold, there will be an injection of RMB into Australia.
Okay. What I've read is that we've fundamentally got our funds, because we're very much a country that needs external funds, from the traditional sources like the UK, the US and Europe. And we haven't been able to tap the tremendous sources of Asian liquidity, and that makes that much more possible, and which would be a game changer, I would have thought.
The main restrictions of of the Chinese capital coming into Australia is not so much whether they can actually exchange their yuan for Australian dollars in Australia. It's the capital restrictions coming out of China that's the consideration. So we're seeing great growth in that. We're seeing baby steps, but we're seeing quite a few changes. And the last visit we took there in December, there was a lot of momentum talking about the changes to the capital account and how they're going to be relaxing the restrictions. So that's your main issue. I'm not sure whether the trading hub here would be what will draw the money in, but perhaps it is a question of confidence in that you signal, as Han said, you signal to the Chinese that we're ready for business and you ask for an official settlement bank in Australia. It shows that we're serious about our relationship with China.
Do you agree with that, Hans? I mean, that in effect, if you realign your trade flows with your capital flows, you reduce a sort of currency mismatch, as I understand it, and that it just generally it puts the whole thing on a more orthodox basis?
Well, I think Cathy is right. It's not going to be an absolute game changer, but it will make differences along the fringes, certainly quite soon. One is, for example, the currency risk, which Chinese investors mention, with the Australian currency fluctuating. If they deal in renminbi, that would be resolved. So it does have an effect, and it's quite an important signal. But I think the confidence building part is really crucial.
Yes, I noticed Gail Kelly, the head of Westpac, quoted during the week that she believed that having a hub would allow Chinese and Australian businesses to invoice and pay in yuan. They'd cut costs and time and complexity, and that this would inevitably lead to increased trade links and familiarity with doing business. Again, I suggest to you, Cathy, it's about making it as straightforward as we expect it to be dealing with the UK.
I totally agree, except for the fact that customers in Australia can already do that. When they go to their bank, they're not concerned about where the bank gets their RMB from. They just want to know that service is available. So banks in Australia are already offering that. And in fact, as part of the CIFA RMB report, we did a survey of 100 companies in Australia and 100 companies in China and asked them about their invoicing practices in RMB. And the big thing that we came out of that was that Australian companies were ready for business. They were quite happy to invoice in RMB and they had the facilities to do so. They were just waiting for the Chinese counterparts to ask them. But the awareness in China was actually much lower than we expected. So the Chinese counterparts were less likely to be invoicing in RMB or to suggest the invoicing in RMB than the Australian counterparts were.
All right. I think I understand that. It's an arcane area. Thank you both very much indeed. Hans, particularly to you, who's just stepped off the plane. Thank you.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Hans Hendrich is Professor of Chinese Business and Management at the University of Sydney. And also, Cathy Walsh, thank you to you.
Thank you so much, Geraldine.
Cathy Walsh, the co-author of a report on the internationalisation of the renminbi.